Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. From the cornfields of Iowa, Jane Boulware defied expectations to lead billion-dollar businesses and rise as a top Microsoft executive. By 52, she had launched three major ventures, navigated the U.S.'s largest merger, and left a trail of influential leaders behind her. The new book, Worthy, From the Cornfields to Corner Office of Microsoft, is her story of resilience and the transformative power of the human spirit. Passionate about empowering others to recognize their worth, Jane now dedicates herself to mentoring, board service, and cherishing outdoor moments with her family in Bellevue, Washington. All the proceeds, by the way, from her book, Worthy, are committed to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America's Youth of the Year scholarships. Jane Boulware, author of Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office of Microsoft, is our guest on This Week in America. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, Rick. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What a wonderful job you've done in the book Worthy. And let's start by talking about your beginnings. In the second chapter of Worthy, you have a quote from an unknown author. I love this. Before you ask which way to go, remember where you've been. So let's start where you've been. The early years, in fact, you called them the pickle bucket years. Explain that in your upbringing. I love that.
Well, it's called the pickle bucket years, the first story. So the book's a collection of stories on my journey from the cornfields of rural Iowa, growing up in Carroll, Iowa, all the way to the corner office and executive offices of Microsoft. And the first story is called the pickle bucket because in our family, I was the fourth of five kids born in a one-bedroom house. We didn't have a ton. And what we did have was, for me, I had a white 5-gallon pickle bucket. It used to store pickles from Max Cafe, but my mom got a hold of it and wrote J-A-N-E, Jane. Big bold, I can see it right here, big bold letters on the side of that. And that was our, each one of our kids had that. So there were five of them, and they kind of shoved underneath the rafters in the attic. And that was our special place. That was our place where we put all the things that we treasured, all the things of value for us. So, like, you know, it varied as a little kid, but like report cards and birth certificates, and if you got a picture or a card or whatever. And that was, for me, my vessel of worth. That's where I wanted to prove myself and just fill it to the brim full of all the things that I did and accomplished and my ribbons and my achievements. And really, I spend the book talking about my attempts to fill the pickle bucket as a way to prove my worth. And then ultimately that learning that my worth wasn't defined by what was in the bucket, but what I took out of it. And so the beginning years of my life, like I said, with pretty modest upbringing, I didn't realize that we didn't have much, because if you looked up and down the block, everybody had pretty much the same. And if you didn't have it, you got it from somewhere else, right? So that really is the first story. And from there, I take off and the stories of overcoming, just even the little things as you're a kid, how you learn to be resilient and do with what you don't have.
And you had a partner through this, the early years, Snorty. Talk about Snorty. I love that. We all need and probably had a Snorty in our lives that we could sort of confide in when things weren't going our way and we needed to talk to somebody.
So Snorty was my stuffed pink hippopotamus. And again, he was my thing. We kind of raised ourselves in a lot of ways and so found our own way forward. And Snorty was the thing that I held near and dear to me. Into his snout, I whispered my little girl's hopes and dreams and all my troubles. And he listened so beautifully, so much so that I rubbed his poor little nose until it was just threadbare. And at some point, I realized Snorty wasn't going to live much longer in the pragmatic world that I lived in. And so I put him in my pickle bucket. I remember so carefully wrapping him like around the little ribbons that I had gotten for spelling bees and so on. And he remained in that bucket until, well, honestly, he remained in that bucket until after I left for college and Dad went and cleaned the attic one day and decided that the pickle bucket wasn't going to make the cut. And he kept the scraps of carpet and he kept the various things in the attic, including the moonshine lining the rafters. But the pickle bucket got chucked. And that was really the formation of me telling the rest of my stories. what was in that bucket.
The book
or
is
what got chucked from that bucket.
What got chucked? The Worthy from Cornfields to Quinter Office at Microsoft. Our guest is Jane Boulware. That's B-O-U-L-W-A-R-E. Her website, very simple. Her name, janeboulware.com. You can link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Book available, of course, at Amazon, all of the usual places. You mentioned going to college. This is interesting. The role of a gnarly nun, a scholarship. And college wasn't something that you was in your future from a young age, was it? This really, you're going to stay in Carroll, Iowa, and raise a family and do what everybody else does in Carroll, Iowa. Talk about getting to college and what that meant for you.
Well, in my family, we didn't talk about careers. We didn't, there wasn't such a thing as a career, right? My dad laid carpeting for a living. My mom occasionally worked at the factory, but mostly stayed home and took care of the kids. She had her own challenges. And so when I was in high school, a gnarly old nun, Sister Frances Xavier, I think she was like 5 foot nothing. She had lightning bolts coming from her eyes. I think she was like 120 years old at that point. Pulled me aside one day and said, "What are you going to do, Jane, when you graduate?" And I never had followed a traditional path, even in my childhood. And I expressed to her my dreams to do something beyond Carroll, Iowa, and my interest in the outdoors and all those. And she says, "You know, you should go to college and you should get a degree in forestry. And I'll help you." And she helped me apply for and secure a $320 scholarship. But that scholarship said that someone thought, in addition to Sister Frances Xavier, that I was college material. And it changed my perspective. I told my dad I was going to college for 4 years, and he kind of snorted at me like, okay, maybe that was like, I think there's like four trees in Iowa. So maybe he was like, "You've never seen a forest and forestry, really." So I left before my parents even really knew I was gone. I just went and worked my way through it.
You know, that
they helped me.
The word determination comes up so frequently in your story. The story is Worthy from Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft by Jane Boulware, our guest on the program. A determination not to let the circumstances, and you certainly had the circumstances in Carroll, Iowa, fear others define you. You were going to set out with your determination to prove who Jane is and to do what Jane wanted to do with her life. Any particular incident that comes to mind when you're talking about that determination really played a pivotal role in your success?
You know, it's interesting. I didn't know determination was in there. It was featured so much. My mom said I never did listen, and I just wasn't willing to listen to all the people who told me what I couldn't do, wouldn't do, shouldn't do. I just did. And that's one of the things. I grew up and I didn't have a lot of expectations for me, but I also didn't have limitations. I just assumed if I could do it, I was going to do it, and I was going to figure out a way. So much of my career and much of what I achieved was just a matter of me not knowing what I couldn't do or figuring out what to find a way. And sometimes that way was unconventional. I remember when I was given the opportunity, someone saw in me, again, something, the opportunity to work in Latin America. And there were so many reasons why I shouldn't do it, right? I was 30 years old, had a 1.5-year-old child. I'd be commuting to and from Latin America from Atlanta. I didn't live in Atlanta. I was a white woman in a machismo culture who didn't speak Spanish. And at first I was like, no, are you kidding me? That's not going to work. But ultimately said yes. And that really is a lot of what the book's about, is that when you're given opportunities, when you are faced with something that maybe other people think you can do or you think you can't do, to say yes. And whether that's called determination, it's called resilience, it's called crazy, whatever that is, that's what was in me and ticking. And I did those things over and over and over again. And it landed me in an executive office. It was never my intent, Rick. I never had a 5-year plan. I didn't even see the ocean until I was 25. So I didn't know of the world that I became a part of.
Yes.
I could not have dreamed it for myself because I literally did not know it existed, which is why I'm donating the proceeds of the book to the Boys and Girls Club, because I know there are so many people, so many kids like me, that given the opportunity, they'll forge their own path. Call that determination. I'm good with that.
Well, and I
But
love the
that's why I'm
fact
doing what I'm doing.
that when you give a scholarship, you are saying to somebody else, you're worthy. We
Oh,
see
yeah.
something in you. You are worthy. And this will be that seed that you need to use that worthiness and go out and make your mark and satisfaction,
Yeah.
success in the world. The book is Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft. Jane Boulware, our guest on the program. As you're going up the path to success, working your way to Corner Office at Microsoft, you were called a bulldog, a bitch, an idiot. Brilliant, also what was included in there, but sometimes in the same week. How did you sort all of that out to get handle the criticism? And then the other side of that is handle the praise.
That's a great question, because sometimes I did better than others, truthfully. I kind of had to learn, because what I did was unconventional. And when I was working at Kimberly-Clark, I was surrounded by what I found was kind of like-minded people. We were all aligned to achieve success, and it was the best idea wins in many ways, and it wasn't building up by tearing others down. And to be truthful, when I got to Microsoft, it was, they have a reputation, or at least back then they had a reputation for eating their young. And if you came in from the outside, no matter how successful you were, and I'd been really successful by just about any metrics professionally, I'd been really successful. And I might have been sugarcoated. They just ate me alive in that what I did outside of Microsoft didn't count. And so having to re-earn my stripes was what it was important. And I got a lot of criticism, some of which was legit, because I was learning the ropes, and some of it was intended to tear me down. Some of it was intended to make me less than and make them feel more than.
Yes.
And I had to differentiate, honestly, how much of it was legitimate things that I had to act on and how much of it I had to say, uh-uh. And there were times when I lost my yardstick for success, and I used someone else's yardstick for success. And when that happens, when you forget fundamentally who you are, what's important to you, and you start playing by someone else's rules that don't fit you, that's when I lost my way,
Interesting.
truthfully,
I would
fundamentally.
love to get your definition of success, and I'll do that in a second, but I want to go back and just tie something together there that you talked about, that maybe the sort of the self-doubt, the self-examination you go through in this
Yeah.
process. You talk about being dismissed and underestimated by many, oftentimes yourself, and you sought relief through, well, bulimia was a problem that you had dealt with, and you dealt with problems. How did you deal with that, and how did you keep going forward and rationalize in your own mind so you didn't join in the conversation that maybe I'm not worthy to be here?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, the book is called Worthy, but if you look at the cover, it's got an un
Yes.
crossed off, because you've read the stories. Much of the stories are about undoing the un as it is about getting to feel worthy, right? The two go hand in glove. And there was a time in my life, and often, where I didn't know how to handle success. I didn't know how to handle failure, and I got those two confused and thought that they were me rather than something that was achieved or not achieved. And so I started to, as most people do, whether it's drugs or it's alcohol or whatever, I started using something to numb the pain. And my drug of choice was food, and my addiction was bulimia. And it was my way of numbing the pain and trying to build some control in my life, but it came to the place where it was disabling me instead of enabling me, as if bulimia could ever enable. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
And it brought me to my knees and made me know that I had to redirect. And in the process of doing that, I reached out to people that before then, I was a vice president by the time I reached out. I was successful. I'd achieved all these things and I had all these awards. And the people that ultimately ended up helping me and saving me and redirecting me were the people with whom I had negotiated union contracts. They were the union workers. They were the very they were people from all walks and colors, and they didn't give a hoot what my title was. They didn't give a hoot what I had achieved, what house I lived in, because I was no better, no less than. And truthfully, they enabled me to rethink what I do. And even today, I carry in my pocket a coin that says, "Together we can do what we could never do alone." And it was a pivotal time for me to realize that it wasn't about me, and it was as much or more about enabling other people and accepting help from other people. So, yeah, I didn't know if I wanted to talk about that in my book. Truthfully, it's pretty out there and vulnerable, but I think it's something that a lot of people struggle with, whether it's bulimia, alcoholism, whatever. Especially women with bulimia and eating and image and wanting to project perfectionism and not wanting the outside people to see the inside.
Yes. So many people try to determine what is success. Am I successful? What do I even consider to be successful? I want to talk about that and the role of collaboration. You've got a unique definition of success. I don't want to have you share it with the listeners. Or we're talking with the author of Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft, Jane Boulware, Boulware. And more with Jane right after these messages. Welcome back. You're listening to This Week in America. Our guest on the program, Jane Boulware, author of the book Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft. Jane, one of the things that sets your memoir apart from so many others is your perspective of success. Talk about that. We touched on that before the break, and the role of collaboration. Explain what success is in your mind, and did that change over the course of your career?
Oh, so much so. Initially, when I thought, you know, growing up, I kind of had to raise myself. And so I thought my success was completely dependent on me. If I did it, didn't do it, whatever, it was on me. And as I became, and as I progressed through my career, I came to realize that no one does it. No one succeeds on their own. No one does anything on their own. And I started to realize that it was okay not to know. In fact, not only was it okay not to know and acknowledge not knowing, that it's only that only the ego pretends not to know. And so what I started to do is realizing that the more I included other people, the more I relied upon other people, the more I lifted other people and surrounded myself with people who were really great, but may or may not have even known how good they were, and tried to make them more than they could or would have been otherwise. That was the definition of success. When I stopped trying to do it my own way, relied on and build on the success and on the merits of other people, holy cow, Katie barred the doors. That's when things took off. That's when the businesses turned around. That's when the best ideas came forward. That's when people wanted to start working on my team and fought to work on our team. And that's when things really happened, because everybody was aligned and everybody was It was level agnostic. I didn't care about your level. I didn't care. It didn't matter, because a title, it didn't matter. What mattered is, did you have what you needed? Do you know what you needed to be successful? Was I giving you and enabling you to be in an environment where you could do your best work? And was I removing the barriers of your success, including me? Because sometimes I was the barrier. You get in people's way, tell them what to do, but no, they knew what to do. When that happened, that is my definition of success. And then, you know, the book's kind of in three parts, Rick. The first part is how I overcame my limitations and circumstances. And the second is kind of, if you think about it, how I overcame my own limitations with the bulimia and the other things. And I would say that the third thing was getting out of the way of others and enabling other people, and getting over the complacency of saying that I was a title and I should know the answer.
Yes.
And so, yeah, the definition of success is never what I do, it's what we do. And I would say that complacency thing, it's not when you get to the top of the tower, it's how many people you lift up into it. That's my definition of success.
Well, let's take that a step further. Let's talk about self-worth. We all try to value what our self-worth is. Sometimes we let other people determine what our self-worth is by their perception of us and the job we're doing, the person who we are. How do you define self-worth?
It's a great question. I think it's, for me, it's pretty simple. Am I giving what I got to the best of my ability to make a difference? Wherever and however that is. Because if at the end of the day, I give what I got, and if I don't give what I got, And if I don't use what I can, then I struggle. And my own self-worth for me is not defined. I don't think you have to earn self-worth. I think it's not defined. I've learned it's not defined by a title. It's not defined by a bank account. It's not defined by what you're wearing or anything else. It's not what you have or haven't even done. It's what you can and will do going forward. So I think that worth for me is feeling good in my own skin, feeling like I'm giving back, and using the gifts that I've got in a way that I feel proud of and make a difference, because I want to give what I got.
Jane Boulware, our guest on the program, one of the top 10 women at Microsoft at age 40. Her book is Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft. Book available. You can order on Jane's website. More information on Jane there as well. Book available at wherever books are sold, literally across the country. You'll get a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's talk about that aspect of it, of mentoring. Giving back is so important to you. Did somebody along the way mentor you? Was that where that example came to you, or something you just sort of developed as you were working with people?
You know, when I first started working, I mean, I'm older, right? So when I first started working my way up through the ranks, there were very few women
Yes.
that I could relate to. And so, no, I didn't have like that kind of mentorship where someone took me under their wing. But I did have a man, Dudley, whose example I wanted to be like him, because he looked out for everybody. He didn't care about gender. He didn't care about rank and file, all those things. He wanted to make the best out of everybody and get everybody aligned. And in that way, he spent time with me. And, you know, when I was a pup learning the ropes, he was able to correct me in a way that didn't diminish me, but made me feel as though he cared and made me better. And that made an impression upon me. But the fact that many of the women, when I was working my way up through the ranks, either weren't given a lot of credit, didn't have a lot of time, or frankly, in some ways, I didn't feel good enough about asking them for support and help. That when I started working my way up through the ranks, I was determined as best I could to make myself available so that, truthfully, there were always more people, because there's not that many women, more people that wanted my time than I had time to give.
Yes.
So I started to create this rule that said, if you're not willing to mentor five people, you need to mentor five people. Show me you're mentoring five people before I will spend time and mentor you. And ideally, if you're senior enough, or it doesn't even matter your level, then you in turn ask those five to mentor five, because everybody's got something to give. Rick, I was surprised how many people said, gosh, I'd love to mentor, but I don't have time. To which I responded, if you're not willing to give what you get, it's not going to happen.
Yes.
Not going to happen. So that was kind of my commitment. And I also truthfully believe that if we're going to change towards the better, corporate America, anything really, we need to get new and different voices together with the voices that are there today. And the only way we're going to do that is lift people who might not otherwise have a string on their head. And that's really where and how I wanted to mentor people that might not otherwise have someone to show them the way, might not have a string on their head, might not be stamped as high potential, but really were. So I felt pretty strongly about that. I still do.
We're back to that word collaboration again, and how important that is, has been in your success, and is in the role of leadership and mentoring people and having success in life. Our guest on the program is Jane Boulware, B-O-U-L-W-A-R-E, website janeboulware.com. Book is Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft. Several minutes left in the program. We've talked about you and this transformation you went through and the ups and the downs. You married your high school sweetheart, someone from Carroll, Iowa, who's with you for this journey. How has that been? What has that done for you? What has it done for him?
I not only married my high school sweetheart, but his grandma and my grandma were friends. My mom and his mom had sleepovers, and his older sister was my husband's good friend in high school. So it tells you kind of how small our community was. And I married at a really young age. And in fact, I initially said no when he proposed to me, because I didn't want that traditional lifestyle. I wanted to have something beyond Carroll, Iowa. And boy, oh boy, did we. He and I together, we grew together. We were children almost together. We grew up together, emotionally, physically, in every way. And that was really critical to my ability to weather the storms, take risks, learn and grow. He was a reflection of what I could be sometimes that I didn't see in myself. So whether it's a spouse or it is a friend or whatever, I really think someone needs to be able to mirror back to you who you want to be, who you're capable of being, that person that you aspire to be and believes in you and lifts you up. And for me, that was my husband, Scott, as well as a whole lot of other friends and support systems. But that core value root system, who I wanted to be and who I aspired to be beyond work, as a mom, as
Yes.
a wife, as all those things, that was my husband, Scott. Yeah.
A few minutes left in the program. You talk about your focus pivoted from making a living to making a difference.
Yeah.
Was that sort of a gradual transformation, or was there a time when you thought, I really want to give back now?
I mean, I tried to give back, particularly through mentoring, et cetera, when I worked in Microsoft, and I had a couple of opportunities as an executive to represent things, but I was more of a sage on a stage. I didn't invest as much as I didn't have the time or the cycles as a mom and an executive and so on to do that. Now I do. I work to make a living for 30 years, and now I live to make a difference. And my husband says it's really retirement is like the one thing I have utterly failed at. It's like you have failed retirement, honey. You're working as much and not getting paid. In fact, you're giving away what you're getting, which is true. But he keeps asking me when I'm going to stop working. And recently, I came across a saying that I think is brilliant. It says, "May your purpose and passion be your life's work." And I tell my husband, "I'll stop working when I lose my passion and my purpose." And hopefully, that will be on the last day I draw breath. So, yeah, I do believe in giving back. I do believe in making a difference. And I think for all of us, that is not only our obligation, that is our privilege to be able to do that no matter
Yes.
what your financial circumstances.
Well,
So, yeah.
you continue to do that. As I mentioned, all proceeds from the book Worthy by Jane,
Yeah.
committed to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America's Youth of the
Yeah.
Year Scholarship Program. All this information is on her website. Time has gone by so quickly on the program. It's been a pleasure to have Jane Boulware with us. That's Boulware. I'm going to quote with end up with a quote from the book here. You say, "Today's culture tells me to airbrush my life, to show only parts of me that are pretty, perfect, and plastic. Yet strength and beauty are found in the bits and pieces we hide from others, the parts of our lives never posted on Instagram. When I share what is imperfect of me and you and share what is incomplete in you, we peel away the veneer of perfectionism to reveal what is real and true, proclaiming to all our bits and parts are worthy, beautiful, and valuable." Talk about that briefly. That really sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. You asked me before what my definition of worthy was, and I kind of stumbled on it. And I really think it's in all of us discovering who and what we're about, being good about that, defending it, and not being dependent upon what other people think. And then in turn saying, there's something there that I'm willing to share. It's not perfect. It's not glitzy. It's not buffed up, shined up, or anything else, but it is who and what I am, and I share it with you, and together with who and what you are, we make something pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And that has been the journey of my life, is to share the bits and pieces, the parts, both shiny and not pretty in me, and to see that in other people, weave it together and create a tapestry that is strong and beautiful and worthy. And to remind people that all those parts of you, they're all worthy. They're all part of who we are. And so I've gone on that journey for myself. And I seek it out in other people because the people that are willing to do that are the people I want to be with.
Well said. An excellent job with Worthy. The book is called Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office on Microsoft, at Microsoft. Our guest is Jane Boulware, B-O-U-L-W-A-R-E, website janeboulware.com. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you'll find the book wherever books are sold. Jane, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can do part two of this. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I've really enjoyed talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure having Jane Boulware, our guest on the program. Book Worthy, From Cornfields to Corner Office at Microsoft. Her website, janeboulware.com. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.